Let's get into the fighting part of this here, because it's part of that. Can you change your partner state? Do you know how to move your partner? Because it's going to come in handy when you get into conflict with your partner, which is just part and parcel of relationships. There are no relationships without conflict. Now, most people get into conflict around money, time, sex, mess, or kids. I suppose there are some other areas like religion and other things that I'm leaving out here, but those are basically the content areas that people fight about. But it isn't really the issue that people are fighting about. It's the way they fight. It's the way they get in and out of conflict that matters. Because, again, we're talking about being able to manage each other properly, being able to stay friendly and not be threatening, being able to proffer relief to one another quickly. And so that's really what it's about. It's not so much the content, because these content areas are going to come up forever. We're always going to be talking about one of those areas, if not more. And probably being different people, we're going to disagree on one or many of those areas. And that's just going to be the way it is. The conflict is not the problem. The disagreement is not the problem. It's the way we deal with fighting that becomes the problem. Imagine yourself on a playmat. You know, those kind of rubberized playmats that you might have experienced, you might have had in elementary school, where you can go on the monkey bars, and if you fall, you're not going to hurt yourself that badly. You're on a playmat. I like to think of couples as having a playmat. And the really good couples, the couples that are very skillful, let's say, at managing conflict, have a very large playmat. They can move around, they can fight, they can do rough and tumble play without really hurting each other, because hurting each other is not play anymore. Now it's getting into war, and we want to stay out of war. And so these couples do rough and tumble, and there's a play to their conflict, and it's never deadly, deadly serious. And so they're able to handle this stuff, and they're able to manage it, and they're able to keep each other on track and out of threat and in that window of tolerance, so they don't get dysregulated. They don't start to feel like they're in the presence of a predator. They don't go to war. And so in a good situation, couples that are secure functioning, have flexibility, sense of humor, they understand the idea of being threatening. And they're able to play a lot, even during conflict. Very, very important. And they're not afraid of that. And I don't want you to be afraid of conflict. In fact, in the end here, I don't want you to be afraid of anything having to do with each other. I don't want you to be afraid of being left. I don't want you to be afraid of being overwhelmed. I don't want you to be afraid that you're going to be on the losing end of an argument all the time. I want you to not be afraid of anything with each other, especially talking about anything. Avoidance is really the death knell of relationships. When people start to avoid because they're afraid of dealing with stuff, that's really going to be a problem. So I don't want you to avoid anything. So let's talk about how to fight so you don't have to worry about avoiding each other. Like I said before, you want to make sure most of the time when you're talking about difficult issues or issues that you know are going to be difficult, that you try to make it face-to-face and eye-to-eye and not across the room, because, again, we're not able to see faces and pupils from across the room. You want to be close enough to where you can see each other's pupils. You want to pay attention to your partner's face. So I like to think of it as keep your eye on the ball. When you're in conflict, you have to be in real time. You have to be looking at your partner's face. You have to be watching, even though you want to look away. Sometimes when we don't like what's going on, we're angry, the last thing we want to do is look in someone's face. We want to look down. We don't want to look away. And that's a problem during a fight, during conflict, because while we're looking away for very long, we're not in real time. We're not seeing the shifts and changes and the variations that are happening in our partner's face, which would allow us to do something different. Don't forget, this process of mutual regulation, of interaction, of attunement, misattunement, attunement, misattunement, error, and then error correction, is a very fast process. Don't look and you miss it. And that missing it could be the difference between feeling better and continuing to feel worse. So I want you to look at each other's face and to keep your eye on the ball. The other thing is that if you're not looking at your partner for extended periods, what are you looking at? You're probably looking at some internal memory, some representation of your partner, something from the past, something that is static, not changing, and probably something not positive. You're not imagining your partner's best. And that's going to fire you up and cause you to make more mistakes. So you want to look at your partner in real time because that's the only person that counts at the moment. The other thing is this idea of mutual distress relief. The purpose of your conflicts should be not only to get your point across and to get your message across and to try to influence your partner, but also to monitor your partner's distress. If your partner begins to look like they are trapped and they'd like to chew their leg off to get out of the trap, that's a time to stop and check in with them. Or if their face goes south and they look like they're very upset or angry, that's a time to check in with them. Because if your partner or you goes out of the window of tolerance, you won't have enough glucose and oxygen to drive the smarter, slower part of your brain that's going to be able to make decisions and corrections and so on. You will be left with your very fast, very primitive, and often very stupid brain that's just going to do what you always do based on your experience. So if you don't want to do that, then you both have to keep each other in the window of tolerance, however you do that. One of the ways to do that is to be friendly, to wave the flag of friendliness in some way. And that could be in the middle of the argument, something distracting, something positive. Oh my God, I love your shoes, by the way. They're really, really pretty. Where'd you get those? And then you go back to fighting. Or, you know, I love you. You are terrific. I adore you. I'm never going to leave you. But you're a pain in the ass, and now you go back into the fight. So that both partners are doing things actively to manage each other's arousal and keeping each other in that window of tolerance, never pushing the other out. Because once you push the other out, that's kind of like falling outside of that play mat. Falling outside of that play mat, now it's no longer fun. Someone hits their head, and they're not playing anymore. They start crying. Now it's serious business. And you don't want that. You want to keep it on the playmat, within the window of tolerance. Don't forget you're lovers, you're not enemies. And there are things you would do with your enemies that you wouldn't do with your lover because you don't care. But you hopefully care about this because you have to live with your partner and you're creating a dangerous situation that's going to be dangerous for you as well. So since you both share the same environment, so it's in your best interest to make sure your partner's okay even while you're fighting. Otherwise, you can't continue to fight. So friendliness, that's a smile, a look on your face, your tone of voice, some compliment, something that you say that's nice, that's reassuring, that's reminding your partner that you're not a threat. Something so that you can tense and relax. And couples that are successful at fighting know how to do this. They know how to tense and relax, go in and go out. This motion, this idea of tensing and relaxing is a little bit like the peristalsis of a stomach that's digesting food. If that peristalsis doesn't happen, the food sits there and you get sick. Same thing with couples who tense, but they don't relax. They tense and they get exhausted. They start to become primitive and threatening, and the game is over. So this idea of tensing and relaxing is really the responsibility of both partners. Imagine again that you're in a boat and you both are responsible for balancing that boat. You got to worry about your partner starting to tip because if your partner tips over, you both go overboard. So you have to keep each other right side up. And part of doing that is knowing how to relax, how to let go, how to drop things, and then pick them up. That leads me to something else. Are you able to start a fight and end it in 3 minutes so that you can go out and have a good time? In other words, could you fight with your partner? Could you both fight about something? And if you only had 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, to do the fight, but make it so that you both end up right side up, tie things up in a bow for now. It's not resolved. It's not over. But for now, you both are okay, and you can table this now, and you can go out to dinner, or you can see your child's play, or whatever it is you have to do. I think it's important to be able to fight and not have any conflict or fight ruin a morning, or ruin an afternoon, or ruin an evening, let alone a day. It should not happen. Secure functioning couples should be able to move in and out of conflict with ease and know how to let go and drop things to fight another day. This is not being a doormat. This is not giving up your argument. This is not giving up. This is simply being smart and knowing how to move in and out of difficult material without falling outside of that play mat, without moving outside of the window of tolerance. When you guys push each other outside of the window of tolerance, you start to enter the fog of war. The fog of war is, as it sounds, a condition where you're fighting, but you have no idea where you're going. You have no idea what you're doing. You're really just trying to survive, trying to be right, survive, not get killed. You don't really care what happens. And when the fog dissipates, then you'll pick up the dead and try to fix things. When you're in the fog of war, you're basically using that fast lower brain I was talking about, that automatic brain. And because you are outside of the window of tolerance, you're not able to think any longer. You're not able to do anything different, anything novel any longer. You're just going to do the same thing that you've always done. From the outside, somebody listening to you can tell because you're saying the same things you always say when you get in this state as a couple. You complain about the same things. There's nothing new. The other thing about the fog of war is that it's not being recorded. When you get into this state, the recording part of your brain is not working right. That's the hippocampus. And that means that any kind of accurate recollection of this war, this fight, will be poorly reconstructed. You can't do it because it's not there. Lots of reasons to stay out of this if you can. Again, it's all about repair, and repair has to happen during the fight. And that's part of that mutual distress relief process I talked about. So I'm willing to say many times during the fight, you know what, you're right, and I was wrong. I'm sorry about that. That was wrong of me to do that. That really relieves distress right away. That calms the other person down right away. That works and allows you to continue the fight. A lot of people aren't willing to do that, and they stay in a tension situation, and the tension just builds to a crescendo, and now they either do something extremely unfortunate, say something threatening about the relationship, one person walks out, something happens, because they're not able to continue under those conditions. So repair, fixing things, apologizing, owning up to things, taking things on, and relieving the other person, making things right, is very important and can be done throughout the conflict, throughout the fight. The other thing important to remember is that there's going to be a perception issue here. A lot of people want to argue with perception. Why? Because you're perceiving something about me that I don't like, and I feel that it's inaccurate and it's persecutory, it's threatening. I want to remind you, though, that perception is as it sounds. It's just perception. And in this kind of relationship, perception is very important, not truth, not being right. It's the perception. If your partner perceives you being hurtful, then you have to take that up and deal with that post haste. You can't argue. You can, but good luck. You can't argue that their perception is wrong. Your intentions don't count here. Only what you do and your partner's perception of what you do. If your partner says, I don't like the way you just looked at me, you looked at me in a very sarcastic way, you can't really say, no, I didn't, because first of all, you don't know what your face looked like. You can't see your face. And secondly, you're not going to win that fight anyway. So this idea here, the one who perceives it wins, is very important during fighting. Just trust that if your partner perceived it, you have to deal with it. I don't like the way your voice sounded just now. What? I didn't do anything with my voice. That's, again, not going to work. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Also, the first person to bring up a complaint, the first person who has a problem, the first person who is in distress gets the attention. period. You don't get to say, well, I'm also upset too because of what you did. That's not going to work. You're going to go to war. Again, this is about distress relief. If the relationship comes first, if you both agree that the relationship is the most important thing and that your relief is important because your relationship must remain attractive, then the first person who expresses a complaint or is hurt gets all the attention until that's completely fixed. Then and only then can you bring up something different. This is real important. Part of this has to do with organization of what you're talking about, but it really has to do with arousal. Because as your partner feels wronged, they're waiting for a quick repair. The longer you take to get there, the more aroused your partner becomes and the bigger problem you have. So if you're going to fix something, fix it fast with as few words as possible. I'm sorry, you're right, I was wrong, I'm an idiot. Anything that's quick that provides relief. Anything more, explaining what your meaning was, what you were intending to do, just makes your partner have to wait longer for what they need to get relief, which is your repair.